The presenting sponsor of Moon Tower Soccer is FVF Law.
To find out what makes FVF a different kind of injury law firm, you can visit FVF.law.
Hello, friends, and thanks for listening to Moon Tower Soccer. This week, we will cover the Austin FC news of the week, which mostly consists of the Diego Fagundes trade. And we also have an interview with the new Austin FC center back, Matt Hedges. My name is Landon Cottam, and I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Jeremiah Bentley.
Hey, everybody. I am Jeremiah Bentley. And Landon, I feel like one of the most like delightfully chaotic MLS games, although it's not officially the MLS, I guess it's like a League Cup game between two MLS clubs. Last night between FC Dallas and Inter Miami, did you watch that?
I did. I got home a little after it started, so I missed the first goal live, but then watched the rest of it, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was everything looked forward. And for a while, I guess you're right. Like for fairly early on, like it seemed like kind of a routine performance, but then the second half came, and there was an own goal from both sides. I think the Miami forward might have had like a more of a banger than No, was it that one or was it the other one? It was like even more than Aaron Motarek.
No, Marco Farfan was the header, right? Yeah. Yeah, it's like Aaron Motarek levels of power into the back of his own net.
Yeah, we had a guy from Tanzania via Abilene, Texas, like an FC North Texas SC score lovingly ended with Messi. Was it like a free kick? Just an amazing free kick goal. The one you see him score so much.
And Maxi Rucci was there. Did you see that?
Yeah.
He was on the Spanish language broadcast and then posted pictures with Messi and Martino and like some other people in the locker room and stuff afterwards.
And they have like, they played at some point for the same club, not together for the same club, but I think like Newell's.
Newell's. They both played for Newell's in their youth, I believe.
Yeah. So it was really, I mean, and it was like a full crowd. The Toyota Tacoma's got a great view of everything that was going on. There was, I think there was like an ice cream sandwich that was made of 12 cookies and like a whole bowl of ice cream or something. It was just, so I feel like for a tournament that's been generally kind of boring in my mind and Austin FC's not in, so I don't have a lot of reason to care about. Like last night was pretty good soccer.
I was struggling to know who to cheer for because it's like, I kind of want Messi and company to like get punched in the mouth a couple of times and be like, okay, you're not just going to walk through this league. But also it's Dallas, and I kind of want Dallas to lose always. But also maybe it's good if Dallas plays more, and then whenever we play them later this month, they're tired coming in. So I was kind of going back and forth. So I'm glad the game went the way it did, where it was just like exciting until the end, and I just didn't care who won at the end.
Yeah, if it had been in like a 2-0 game either way, that would not have been as much fun. But the way it turned out was absolutely amazing.
All right, so
let's get in the news of the week. I was going to open with, last week I was in Denver, and we were talking about seeing Diego Fagundes score the club's first goal in history. And then Mike LaHood on our interview talked about Josh and Diego working together to reinvent his career. And then a few hours later, we got some huge breaking news.
Yeah, actually, before we jump into it, let's do this. I want to start this off a little bit different. Like we're known for being like on the more academic and analytical side of things when it comes to Austin FC. I want to start this episode off with a moment of compassion and gratitude. So we're grateful to Diego Fagundes for everything he's done for the club. I also want to express compassion to Diego Fagundes. Like one of the most brutal parts of American sports is trades, right? Like this is not a thing that happens in other parts of the world or other leagues. So you like get sent to another team without really knowing about it or without having any say in the matter. And it's a really normal part of American sports, but I'm sure it's a really rough thing to go through. And it's a really difficult time for Diego and his family. And also express compassion for like our fellow Austin FC fans, because I know like, again, I very much always jump straight to like the analytical part of it, but it's like Diego is a huge part of this team's history. And so I think it's only right to allow ourselves to be sad for a moment about it. And so before we break all this down, let's mourn the ending of the Diego Fagundes era and raise a glass to Diego.
I love it. Well, and I mean, for me, that's a great point. Cause I think there's two players probably that all my friends who are not like super fans, but our fans would text me about out of the blue and be like, oh my gosh, what was going on, right? And it was basically Diego Fagundes and Brad Stuver. And it's because of the connections they've had with the city and with the fans and all the exciting moments they've had and just the way that they've connected. So yeah, for sure, man, that's it's a big loss regardless of the mechanics of the deal or the results that come out of it or where Austin FC ends up or whether it's a good deal for the long term. But it is for sure. And especially for a guy who like just had a baby and has a whole family. He's relocated here too, to your point about sort of the difficulties of American sports.
Yeah. Okay. So now that we've done that, let's get back to our nerd.
let's get into some really cold, calculated, thoughtless, heartless analysis.
All right. So I guess we should just go through like the specifics of this trade. Do you want to run us through those real quick?
Sure. So this is from Tuesday. Austin FC announced today the club agreed to a trade with the LA Galaxy. Austin receives midfielder Memo Rodriguez, who we will get to a little bit later because I know people have questions about him. Up to $900,000 in GAM, including $300,000 of guaranteed 2023 GAM. And maybe we can get into that too, because there's a big gap there. Galaxy received Diego Fagundes and could also receive up to $150,000 in conditional GAM if Rodriguez meets certain performance metrics. So it seems like there's some of this GAM can go either way. And we can save that for like a little bit later. But those are the basic mechanics of the deal is Austin FC is out Diego Fagundes and receives Memo Rodriguez plus an amount of GAM in six figures and probably at least more than $500,000.
Okay, so I guess now do we want to walk through like the order of events and like how this all happened?
Yeah, right. I think we can, but just from there's a lot of perspectives here and we don't know them all. And Landon Cottom fan fiction is like one of my favorite things that we do on this show. But I think we can like try to best recreate what we know about the day of the deal itself. And then I'll start and you may want to jump in or disagree, but we know that at some point in time, based upon a lot of sources, but at some point in time, it's a call from Josh Wolf to Diego Fagundes, letting Diego know that he was being traded to LA. We know that it was not a lengthy call. We know that the Fagundes family and Diego were not expecting it. Like it was not a move that he wanted. And we also know that, I guess, Bocha Fagundes, like an hour before a tweet from Tom Bogert came out, like was really mad about something on Twitter, which I think led to a lot of speculation. But we also know that Rodolfo Borrell on his Friday press conference said that once the news broke, they wanted to bring Diego in, but once the news broke, they had to call him so he didn't find out about it on Twitter. And I guess then the statement in between becomes like, what does the news broke mean? Does that mean like it obviously happened before the Tom Bogert tweet? Does it mean Tom Bogert called the front office and he's like, hey, I'm going to run with this, so here's your chance to let him know? Like that's the part we don't know. Did I summarize that fairly correctly?
Yeah. And I know a lot of Austin FC fans were upset about the fact that like all he got was a call, but I don't know how you feel about it. I feel like that story tracks just like Bogert published it then, but I've heard Bogert's talk about on podcasts and stuff, how he's like sitting around sweating, waiting for someone to hit publish on something that he's already written, submitted an hour before. And so like, I feel like the phone call story tracks to me. I know some people don't buy it and that I don't know why like they wouldn't do the other thing.
And like I told you before, like knowing from our entire experience with Josh Wolf that he's not super great about the people stuff, the fact that he was rushed in some way into a situation to make a phone call, and that a person on the other end of that phone call didn't feel it was like super forgiving or diplomatic, like tracks with every single thing I know about Josh Wolf. So, like, I'm not surprised. If Josh Wolf had been like kind and, you know, spent 45 minutes on the phone explaining the situation and answering everything, I'm like, that would seem weird for what I know about Josh Wolf. So like knowing, like after watching him in press conferences and some videos and like things he said after games and stuff, like, yeah, this is exactly what I expect him to do. So like I've become no more, this has not changed my opinion about sort of Josh Wolf and his fitness to serve as the Austin FC manager, because it seems like totally in character.
I guess, do we want to get into why this happened? Like the reasons why Diego Fagundes was traded?
Yeah, let's get into why, and let's maybe start with just the least controversial, or I guess the most academic part of that is like, why Diego and not, because we saw this so much, like, why is it Diego and not Redis or not Ring or not Rigoni?
Yeah, and this is like, I've seen so many people talk about, including like people who I think know why. And I won't get into that, but it's like, I understand why you would say like, okay, in a perfect world, there are people performing worse and making more money, or you paid more money for them. But like, you have to have a market, right? Like if nobody is buying, then that asset is not worth anything. And so, yeah, Emiliano Rigoni makes a lot more money than Diego Fagundes and has performed worse than Diego Fagundes, but who's going to buy Emiliano Rigoni, especially within the league right now? Nobody's going to take on that salary. Nobody's going to trade any valuable assets for taking on that salary at this moment either. And that's the thing that Borrell said in the press conference, is like, they were willing to take this salary. And he emphasized that a couple of times, that like, that part played into it. Like his salary wasn't so high that another MLS team was incapable of taking him on. And like, I know there was talks about a Rodney Redis trade or Rodney Redis transfer a few weeks ago, but like in the grand scheme of things, Rodney Redis cap hit is like 200,000, 250,000 or something like that. He's not taking up a lot of our like roster assets. Diego Fagundes is on $1 million. And like, do we have a segment dedicated to like the MLS math of it all?
Well, yeah, we should. Well, let's maybe not get into that right now. Let's sort of finish the why part of it. And I guess the other thing is, this is speculation that I heard from Phil West before the press conference that Borrell speculated on, is this is a outreach from the Galaxy, because they knew that club wants to improve. Diego had a value to the club, and Diego's sort of a distressed asset at this point.
And the Galaxy cannot make any international transfers this summer.
Right. So, that's true. The only way the Galaxy can make moves is from within the league. Now, I guess we could speculate a little bit on why everybody knows that Diego is a distressed asset. And that's because I don't think it's like super secret that the coach and the player weren't getting along, and probably hadn't, based upon comments from last year. Three or four times that Josh Wolf decided to bring up Diego Fagundes' salary, like during press conferences this year. It's like, it was kind of obvious. And that's why it kind of makes sense to make this deal now before the end of the year, because Austin needed to get all they could out of him. And, you know, another 3 or 4 months of like these guys not getting along and Diego not playing all that well also ultimately harms Austin's ability to get good return on this asset.
Yeah. And I think that's exactly right. Like the opportunity was there. A team was willing to take the salary. As you said, like, it seems like from mostly statements coming from the Diego Fagundes camp, from his father on Twitter, from other places as well, that it seemed like Diego Fagundes did not like Josh Wolf, and Josh Wolf was not disputing that fact anywhere. And you also, I mean, like, I feel like in the fan community, a lot of the blame is getting pointed at Josh Wolf. And I, like, again, we talked about this off air. Like, I don't want to come across as super pro Wolf, because I'm honestly kind of ambivalent towards that right now, but it's not hard to think of why, or to believe that Josh Wolf was not super pleased with Diego Fagundes. I said on last week's show that Josh Wolf likes him a Boy Scout. Like, he's got, you think of Jossy Sardes, Ethan Finley, Brad Stuver, Hector Jimenez, like these consummate professionals who are like probably live pretty boring lives so that they can be the best that they can be at their job. I would put other players on the team probably not in that category. And I, if I had to guess, just based on his fitness at the beginning of the season, just kind of the way he carries himself in general, that Diego Fagundes is not in the Boy Scout camp.
I think it's fair. I think, and I'm going to apologize to him now if I get this wrong, but I believe Verity Keeper Kit Brad said something on Twitter along the lines of, like, it's possible that Diego was a little bit of a problem in the locker room, Josh Wolf's a complete jerk, and that Austin FC got the best deal they could out of this. And, like, all three of those things can be true at the same time. And it just becomes a question of, like, the balance of those. And I think for me, we talked about sort of trying to explain this to our friends who are fans who are maybe not in the middle of all this. And I feel like that's maybe the, like, the best explanation that you can give for, like, why this deal happened and why it happened, it did, and why it happened when it did.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. That, like, there are a lot of different aspects of this to talk about or to focus in on, but all of them can be true, like, at once. And yeah, I guess where do we want to go next?
Okay, well, let's go to, so what does it mean for this season? So now 2023, Austin FC sits in fifth place. We know the Western Conference is super congested, and you can move down the table, mostly up and down the table, though, a little bit based upon a couple sets of results. And we know now we do not have Diego Fagundes, and Austin does have Memo Rodriguez. And I guess before we talk about Rodriguez, like, does this send any a note to you on, like, is Austin giving up on the season, or, you know, are we just, like, punting until 2024? Like, I don't know. What did you just make out of the deal itself?
I think, like, punting it is a strong term. I don't, like, we are a worse team now, like, as far as, like, on paper, just, like, at the highest capabilities, the players on the team now are worse than the players on the team with Diego Fagundes on it instead. That is true. But as far as, like, this isn't like an NBA team tanking so they get the number one draft pick. Like, Diego Fagundes has, what, 2 goals and 1 assist this year, something like that?
Correct.
And so it's not like, I believe that it is possible and maybe even likely that Diego Fagundes has another few really good years in MLS, but it didn't really look like that was going to happen this year. He's been healthy and fit for a while now and is still kind of been middling at best. And so, like, I don't know that Diego Fagundes was going to make this team this year a whole lot better. And so I don't think it's tanking. We've still got guys who can play and have played decent at times this year. Memo Rodriguez, we'll get into him as well. Like, he can contribute to a team like this. So I don't think it's tanking, but it is very much sacrificing some quality this year in order to improve in the future.
Okay, so let's just get into the very specifics of it. So Diego Fagundes played 2,700 minutes last year. He's played about 1,000 this year. So it's a lot of minutes to go around for other players. Where do you see, who do you see picking up those minutes, and in what way?
Yeah, I mean, I think immediately the question is Rigoni healthy? Because I know North End Podcast, they do their, what do they call it, breadcrumbs when they watch, like, the team videos and try to find clues within it. They noticed that Emiliano Rigoni is wearing practice shorts in, like, a barbecue video on somebody's Instagram the other day. And so the theory is, like, maybe he's training now. He's training with the team at this point. And that would probably track. I think it was Josh Wolf said after maybe, like, the first League Cup game or something like that, that he had 4 weeks left. That would put it up, like, about a week from now, that, like, him being back in full training. And then by the time we play another game, you'd think maybe he would be available again. So Emiliano Rigoni is an option. I guess we're saying that Ethan Finley is kind of the locked in guy on the other side. So yeah, I would guess it's just going to turn into a competition between Rigoni, Redes, and Rodriguez. And then I also wouldn't be surprised to see CJ Fodre on a bench or two going forward.
Yeah, I mean, Austin's been, they've been teasing that a little bit. We saw him get a little action in the League's Cup match. And it kind of goes back to what you said earlier about, or a few shows ago, about him not being tested against Austin FC 2 action. Maybe he should get a loan. Like, maybe a few first team minutes would do him right too. And then I guess the other thing is, so what does it mean long term? And this is where we can get into the GAM, like the MLS math of this, and maybe a little bit into what Burrell said about the deal and why it was the right deal sort of in the time. And then maybe also, like, what makes it a good deal? This is one of those ones that I feel like so many of the deals in 2021 were like, well, this deal's okay depending upon what the next one is, like what they do with the GAM. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on those things?
Yeah, I mean, as far as what it does for us in the future, this is a substantial move. And, like, Burrell was saying in the press conference that when he got here, he knew that the budget was tight, but he didn't realize, like, how tight. And he said, I think this is in a video that Jorge Iturralde posted where he was asking questions in Spanish, but he repeated the word very emphatically, zero, zero, zero cap space. Like, we cannot make any moves right now. And so without changing anything that we have at the moment, we cannot make signings now. We cannot make signings in the winter transfer window. Like, we have to move people out. And so, I think this was like the opportunity that was there. And we've already talked about the reasons, other reasons that may have helped it along, but we're bringing in the 300K in 2023 GAM, which I was under the impression at first that GAM expires year by year, which I think is still true for the original owner of the money. But when you trade it to someone, you can use it for several windows past that. And it eventually does expire and start to lose value. But Austin FC will be able to use that 300K in GAM of 2023 GAM for the next few windows. So that's not going to go anywhere. It doesn't matter that we didn't use it now. And then the up to 600K in conditional GAM, I'm guessing that those metrics aren't going to be super hard to hit to get most of that money. Otherwise, like if it's just 300K, this is not a worthwhile deal. But if it's 900K, that's pretty big money. Like, the if you look at like the highest trades in MLS history, I think you get to like number five and it's at 1.5 million or something. And so we're almost at a million. This is a big trade as far as the GAM goes. So let's say he does reach the max, so 900K in GAM plus the 1 million of cap space. 1.9 million is, I think that's how much GAM each team got like last year. And so it's essentially opening up a whole other like salary budget to use on other players, other transfers, other trades. And so like it really does give this team a lot more flexibility. And when you add that on top of contracts that may or may not be expiring this winter, Rodolfo Borrell is going to have a lot of space and a lot of money to work with to really start to shape this team in his image.
Yeah. So maybe I was going to think about those contracts too. It's like, we believe that Alex Ring and Maxi Arruti both come off at the end of this year.
Yeah.
So you could, if you add at least, and there's going to be other players too, right? Because there's players that come off every year, but like if you add those two along with Diego's money, I mean, it does become fairly significant. And also the Rodriguez memo's only through the end of this year too, right? I believe in guaranteed.
It's options contract after that, but even if he does stick around, he's on like 240K or something. So he's really low money.
He doesn't count a lot either way. Okay. So what is it? So I guess then, I mean, I sort of preface it with my opinion on it, but like, it becomes a good deal if Austin FC uses the money they have available from this deal along with other money that's going to come in the offseason wisely. And it's like a bad deal if they spend it stupidly. Is there any other way to look at that?
No, that's it. That's what it is. And like, we'll talk more about Rodolfo Borrell later. I have more faith in him to use it wisely than I did in the previous administration based on their track record. But he still hasn't really done much as far as like changing this team so far. So it's all going to depend on how he uses that money.
All right. Is there anything else we need to say about this deal? Did you get all the points you wanted to get into?
No. I think we got to everything I wanted to cover.
Well, the only thing I wanted to do is bookend this, like with what you did in the opening, and just say that one of the things that was really special to me that I think maybe realized that like Diego was a different guy. Maybe like this club is just gonna be a different thing for this city. Was when he just like showed up to play foot golf with a group of random fans early on in his time with the club. And that sort of made me realize there's going to be a different kind of connection maybe between the player and the fans. And then also like that first goal was amazing. I remember him like throwing up the Los Verdes, the LV sign, like in the corner we were in. It was like pretty amazing. And probably my favorite moment. One of my favorite, up until Brad Stuver's like PK save and turning around in the south end, probably my favorite moment like between a player and a fan in club history. And then just like hugging and crying Kurt Mangum and Chris Wellhausen after that game was like a really special moment. They'll have two, so like, all like, it's, you know, it's a weird and difficult situation, and all that aside, like, the guy's still a club legend, and I appreciate everything he did for Austin.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk a bit more about Memo Rodriguez and our thoughts on him, and then also the press conference that Rodolfo Borrell held late last week. Hang tight, we'll be right back. When no one is around.
Yeah.
Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by our friends at FEF Law, the official injury lawyers of Austin FC.
FEF is a different kind of personal injury law firm dedicated to community, transparency, and client education.
You can go to fef.law to find out what makes FEF a different kind of injury law firm and why understanding your legal options can dramatically change the outcome of a case. Once again, that's fef.law. Amplify Credit Union is a member-owned financial cooperative that served the needs of Central Texans for over 5 decades. Amplify's team lives and works in the community, making them the experts on how members can achieve their financial goals.
What makes Amplify different? No bank fees. Amplify is the first financial institution in Texas to put an end to bank fees. In 2022, Americans paid almost $8 billion in overdraft fees alone. Millennials paid an average of $336 a year in bank fees, which works out to 6 Austin FC game tickets per person per year. And I think it works out to about 20 of those giant ice cream cookie things that we talked about at the FC Dallas match. You'll pay none of those bank fees and get none of the calories from eating 20 of those cookies with Amplify Credit Union.
Amplify membership is open to any Texas resident. Learn to trust your bank again at Amplify Credit Union. To learn more, go to www.goamplify.com/moontower. Okay, we are back. So we talked about how part of this trade was the money, but we also got a player in return, which kind of sweetens the pot a little more and like adds to the value of that trade. It's Memo Rodriguez. This is a guy who played for many years in Houston. I think he went through their academy and then left their academy and played for RGV for a bit and then signed for the Dynamo. But is a Texas kid, born and raised in Texas, lived in Texas his whole life until I think he maybe went on loan to Charleston Battery or something like that once. But I was looking through our previous players. We've only had one other native Texan on the team, period. And I thought maybe there were some other people who like semi counted, and there's maybe like one and a half if you count it that way. But can you name the other ones I'm thinking of?
So one and a half other native Texans? Man, I was going to go with the guy who I've already forgotten, who was like an Austinite, except he wasn't born in Austin, that we had in our first year.
He played for us or he didn't play? Kukutamani.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's who I'm counting as a half, because he came here when he was like pretty young. Yeah. But Mackenzie Gaines is the other one.
Oh, man, I totally forgot about Mackenzie Gaines. Yes.
But I'm like, we'll talk about who Memo is as a player, but I think it's cool that we're getting like a true, like native Texan on the team. Cause we just really haven't like, yeah, we had McKenzie for a while, but he like just wasn't around for very long. And so to have Memo come in, like an MLS vet, a guy who grew up in the Houston area, lived in Texas his whole life. Like, I think that's going to be fun to have on the team.
Yeah, it'll be neat. And so I guess, and I don't believe this will happen, but like, if you're mad about Diego, don't take it out of Memo. I don't really think anybody will. I've seen that. I believe that Austin fans are better than that. So I don't worry too much about that happening.
Very important to remember that Memo Rodriguez is not Diego's replacement. Currently, a big bag of GAM is Diego's replacement. So it's not fair to judge them one for one, especially given the context. So do you remember what his salary is? I want to say it's like 200 something thousand. It's not super high, but it's like for that salary, he's quite a good player. Like, I think he's one of those like domestic guys who's probably like a little bit underpaid for his output over his career. He played a lot of wing for the Galaxy. But even when he's on the wing, he likes to float inside and kind of combine with the midfield. And for the Dynamo, he played inside as like an 8 or a 10 pretty often as well. So even like when he's on the wing, kind of like Fagundes does, like his tendency is to come inside and to kind of like float in and be creative in the more central areas of the field. Kevin Morris has a theory with the Matt Hedges signing, and like if Vicenin comes back, that eventually we're going to move back to like that 5 at the back, 3-2-2-3 shape. I think Memo Rodriguez would be really well suited to that formation, playing in one of those, like this is again in like in the reality where wings don't exist anymore, and he's playing in those like attacking mid roles where Ragone and Finley and I think Trusi played a couple of games there, but I think he would plug into that spot really well. in the 4-3-3, I think he could play on either side as a wing and kind of move inside and combine with the midfield. Or I think he could also play in like Owen Wolf's spot, like how Alex Ring played a lot of last year in that dual 10 role. I think he would slot in pretty well there as well. But he's like a decently quick, pretty good technical ability, really hard worker on both sides, smart rotational play as far as like just moving about the pitch, rotating with guys, knowing where to go. Like he's pretty good at all that, but I don't think he's ever scored a ton of goals in his career. He's never had a ton of assists. So he's a bit more of like a role player facilitator guy than he is like a goal scorer or a chance creator. So it's a guy like I really like as a role player on an MLS team, but I'm not going to expect him to like carry the team at any point.
Yeah, I think it's a really good summary of it. It's like there's not going to be eye popping stats and the goals. Well, I guess there's not a lot of goals to replace from Thiago Figueiredo this year, but like the contributions are probably going to come largely from somewhere else.
He also just seems like a good dude. Like I think he's going to be a good locker room guy. I watched some interviews with him and he said one thing that I really liked that it was an interview in LA. He had just moved to LA and went on some podcast and they asked like, how do you keep yourself motivated when you're on a really bad team, like asking about those years that Houston was so bad that he was playing for them. And he's like, were you thinking about it as an audition to move to a different team? And he's like, I think you should treat every game and like every practice as an audition because somebody's always watching you. You build your reputation that way. I really like that about him. Like to say like everything's an audition. I'm always working to get better and to prove myself. And so I think, if nothing else, like he'll come in and just be like a good dude to have around.
So do you want to transition to why playing on a team led by Rodolfo Borrell, probably everybody should have that belief about themselves and their role in the club?
Yeah. So Borrell, they held a presser on Friday. And it was mostly to talk about the Figueiredo trade, right? But he gets into some other territory as well.
Yeah, it's a little bit... I don't think it happens other than the Figueiredo trade, and based upon like sort of when it was announced and when it happened, like I could almost guarantee it doesn't happen without the Figueiredo trade. But he did take questions from the media and some other things came up outside of that. And so I think there's definitely notes worth having. One of the things I saw a lot of reaction to online was when he talked about like Austin FC overperformed last year and that it was really going to take 3 to 4 windows to build like a successful, competitive, like long-term club. And I saw a lot of negative reaction to that. I don't know why. Cause I think what he was trying to say is like, yeah, you can have like a fluke good year, but to build like the kind of sustained success that somebody like Seattle or LAFC or maybe Cincinnati now we'll see going down the road, like to have that kind of success, like it's going to take a few windows to build the depth of the roster up and down. That's just like true.
That's just realistic and true. Like that, like the really good teams in this league were not built overnight, and like the ones who were good overnight, it was probably not as overnight as it seemed. If you look at just like another thing he mentioned is like the move, like how natural the movement is, like has to be in a salary cap league where like he didn't name names, but one example I could give would be the LAFC, where even when they look like the best team in the league, they're making trades and making transfers and selling players every window. And like, there's always going to be like these moments where a player, like to go back to Diego Fagundes again, like with his salary, like that is always going to be an attractive asset to cash in on in a salary cap league. Otherwise, maybe you just sit on it and like, it's fine. Like, Real Madrid doesn't care about how much a guy's making. They want to win, and they'll spend as much money as it takes to win. In a salary cap league, you can't do that. And Borrell talks about like the movement is natural. We need to get used to this part, but it's going to take a while, and we're going to have to like do this for a long time to make it work. And so, I don't think it's unreasonable to say like the full build, like the full Burrell build, will take 3 to 4 windows. I don't think that means like we shouldn't expect to get better this winter. Like we almost have to get better this winter, but to do everything that he wants to do. Yeah. I think it's totally realistic to say it's going to take that long.
All right. And another thing. Yeah. That was a good point. Another thing that I thought specifically, we talked about sort of the structure of the club. He specifically mentioned finding a way to restructure the Department of Scouting and Recruitment. He said, from my experience, you try to rush things, you commit a double error. We don't want to do that. So I would expect a lot of attention to be paid to that area over the next couple of years. And that's like one of the reasons Austin brought him in, right? It's like his expertise there. But that's sort of the most direct indictment I've seen of sort of the way that the club was structured before. But the results of some of the recruiting, particularly from places like South America, would show that there's no doubt that there is a lot of reform needed in that area.
Yeah. And I don't know if you saw any of this, but there was, I guess you watched a lot of like the clips that were posted to social media by various news outlets. So Jorge Iturralde also posted, I don't know if this was a separate interview that he did, but it was all in Spanish, but I watched through all of that as well. And Jorge kind of like went back to stuff that he said in the press conference in English and asked him about it again. And on that note, like he said, like, I don't want to talk about the people who were here before me. Like Jorge asked him about it, and he was essentially like a very graceful way of saying, like, I'm not going to say that what they did hamstrung me, but
but we have no money and we need to redo everything. Yeah.
He's like trying to say that without saying it. And I think he handled it well. Like we can talk about this in a little bit, but he speaks really well in both languages. And I think he did a good job of like saying, like, I'm not going to use this as an excuse, but we're in a tight spot and it's not my fault.
Yeah. Well, so those were kind of the highlights for me from the press conference. And you had mentioned earlier on the show, like that you came out of it feeling like he was a guy that you could trust. You'd feel like if he'd be in charge of the club, maybe even more than you did before. So do you want to share like why behind that?
I mean, I just already really liked him. I just like that. He also just like said some other things that made it very clear that he's not lying when he says he's been watching MLS for a long time. Like he understands it and like is not just saying that to make himself look good. Like I believe he's been staying up all night watching MLS for the last 5 years and like learning about roster mechanisms and doing, like, I believe he understands those things just based by the way he talks about some of them.
I mean, I think we've mentioned this before, but just he's more direct in answering questions than anybody else has ever sat behind
that
desk and more comfortable answering questions. And I think even hearkening back, there was some question on the Diego trade about like, well, was he involved or not? Because Precourt said that he was not going to have any influence over this window. And Burrell kind of took the mic back and he's like, but I've been talking to people. So I think more than maybe anybody that's ever sat behind a microphone from the club, including the owners, like he's willing to be direct and be pretty straightforward about responding to the things that come up.
I think that is a point worth kind of backtracking to, is this is another thing that Jorge Iturralde asked about in Spanish. And the questions he asked him was about like, are you, like, essentially, I don't remember what the question was, but it's essentially asking like, are you like acting as the sporting director now? And I think he was trying to get at like, A, was the Diego move your idea? And B, like, is anything that happens now your idea? Or is it still like Sean Rubio and Josh Wolf making the decisions? And I've seen a lot of fans say like, well, Precourt said he wasn't going to do anything. It's like, did you, Jeremiah, you didn't take that to mean like Burrell is just going to sit on his hands for the next month and wait until December. Like, that's not what they meant, right?
No, it's not at all what they meant. And I thought it was good that Burrell kind of in that moment, even talked about it. He said, I mean, I know there were things that were already in play, really, is what he was saying. And also it was super late in the window. And so like, don't expect results right away. But I felt like it was pretty clear that from that day forward, and that was reinforced again with the press conference on Friday, that whatever's going on, like, that man has the last signature on all the things going on the sporting side of the club.
Right. And to bring it back to the Diego trade, like, we know that like this wasn't 100% Rodolfo Borrell's idea. We know there are other things going on, but Rodolfo Borrell is not going to, he's not going to green light this move if he doesn't also think there's some positives to it. And so like I've seen a lot of fans saying like, this is 100% on Josh Wolf and that it was his idea to do it. It's like, maybe it was his idea, but like Rodolfo Borrell is not going to just going to say, like, I think this is stupid and I think you need to get over it. But Anthony Precourt said, I'm not going to do anything this summer, so I guess I have to let you. Like, that's not how any of this works. Like, Borrell saw value in this move and would not have let it happen if he didn't see value in it.
Right, right, for sure. And I guess the last thing on this before we close out is we kind of opened it with sort of this potential for, like, I don't know, ruthlessness, maybe it's not the word, but basically, like, everybody should be on notice that, like, if you don't perform, there's a
Borrell?
Pretty, from, like, top to bottom, you should be on notice that if you don't perform, like, you can easily be out and on your way to some other club.
Borrell said as much, pretty, like, more or less said that. Like, it was, again, like, he has a way with words. Like, I like the way he speaks, but it was, like, a very gentle way of saying, like, nobody's safe. But like, don't be afraid. I'm not trying to like, but like, this is a salary cap league. Whenever we see a way to make some, like, make some flexibility, make this team better, nobody's safe. And I like that. Like, I think it's, again, like, this is the analytical part, not the emotional part, but I like that he knows what needs to be. We think he knows what needs to be done and isn't afraid to do stuff like that. And like, maybe we won't always agree with it. Maybe we don't like it sometimes, but the fact that he's willing to just like do the business and like do the hard work. Like, I don't know. I'll, even though I do have mixed emotions about Diego Fagundes leaving, I am encouraged by the fact that Rodolfo Borrell is not afraid to make a move like that.
I think it's a great way to sort of put an end on that. We can briefly talk about the only other two pieces of news posted on the Austin FC website this week. Outside of that, because of like what's going on with the League's Cup and everything else. One is Vigo Ortiz got called up the U15 Mexican national team. Ortiz, you may remember, was the, like, that was the GA Cup winning team, right?
He
was
correct.
Like,
yeah.
So like the MVP of the tournament. Is that right?
I think so. I think he was the MVP. Yeah. But he performed really well in that tournament. And I super cool. Like, I know, I don't know, there's some tribalism between US fans and Mexican fans, but I think it's cool to have Austin players playing for both. I would love to see more of that.
Yeah, so this will be his first involvement with the U15 Mexican youth national team. He played in training camp with them, and then he will also compete in a tournament in the Dominican Republic beginning on August 6th. So he'll get some game time there for the Mexican national team. So it's just really sort of a cool bit of news around development of academy players. And the other one is just the Austin FC 2 match on, that would be Sunday, correct?
Sunday night.
I was watching on my phone while I watched wall-to-wall Lionel Messi League's Cup coverage. So not a super exciting match. I believe that it ended up 0-0, and then Austin won in penalty kicks, despite being up a man for most of the match and dominating possession and shots and everything else.
I didn't get to watch this. I was out of the house, and so I didn't get to watch this one. I watched the last few penalty kicks, and that's all I got to see. But just a few interesting notes based on the lineup is that Micah Burton continues to get starts with Valentin Noel in there, and then Anthony DeAnda got a start at left back.
Oh yeah, that was cool. Yeah, that was good to see.
Which I think he got his first minutes like in the last week or something like that. So I know, like, this is a kid, whenever me and Mike did our Moon Tower Junior episode all about Austin FC 2, that about Anthony DeAnda, like, I was talking about there's going to be movement. There's going to, like, not all these guys are going to be on the team next year. A guy as young as Anthony, if he sticks around and like keeps working, he's going to get chances. And the minutes he played in that game last week, I think he showed really well. I didn't get to see this one, but he got the start, which means they saw something that they like. They're seeing something that they like in training. So that's really exciting to see a kid that young, who I think he's still 17, to get a start for this team and to be playing, like, that's really, really cool.
And I think that still leaves Austin, I think, second in the West in MLS Next Pro. So another result, another 2 points, continue to move forward. I think that kind of covers the news of the week. Let's take a break, and then we'll do this Matt Hedges interview.
All right, we'll be right back.
Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by Covert Ford. The Coverts have been meeting the needs of local car buyers for 114 years because of their service, financial expertise, and support after the sale.
In addition to supporting car buyers, Covert's an important part of the soccer community and the official automotive partner of Austin FC.
Right now, Covert has a deal on a 2023 Ford F-150 XL Super Cruise, stock number 223-0076. The MSRP is $53,815, but with dealer discounts and package savings, it could be yours for only $45,299 plus tax, title, and license. And the approved Ford credit, you can get it for 0% APR over 36 months or 3.9% APR over 60 months.
You think Maxi Arrucci drove his, was it a Bronco that he got from Covert? Do you think he drove it to the Messi game in Dallas?
He probably drove it up there. He probably looked really cool in it. Probably made a lot of people jealous about it, I guess. And then maybe he has like custom Austin FC plates on it too. With his own name and number. I feel like that would be kind of a Maxi thing.
If you're in the market for a new or used vehicle, be sure to check out covertford.com.
Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by Sage Wilson Realty. Thanks to Sage Wilson Realty, we'll be giving away 2 tickets to an upcoming match whenever matches come back around again. So fill out the form in the show notes to enter for your chance to win.
Again, this is made possible by Sage Wilson Realty. So if you or someone you know are in need of Sage real estate advice in Austin, talk to our friends at Sage Wilson Realty. Be sure to check them out online at sagewilson.com. All right, our guest today is an 11-year MLS veteran, 2-time MLS Best 11, 2016 MLS Defender of the Year, and Austin FC's newest center back signing. It's Matt Hedges. Matt, thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And welcome to Austin as well. I know you have a wife and 2 kids, is that right?
That's right,
and yeah. Are they excited to be back in Texas after a little stint away?
Yeah, they're definitely excited to be back, excited for this great weather that we're having. The warmth is, you know, they missed it. And, you know, just it's home. Texas is home for us, so it's good to be back.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to hear many people like say they're excited about Texas in August, but I'm glad that y'all are. So what was Toronto winter or Texas summer? Which one's more extreme?
I think they're both on the extreme end, but I'll say Texas summer. It's a little bit more extreme because, you know, snow is snow, but hot can get hotter.
Hey, you're originally from, is it Indiana? Is that where you grew up?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't know, I was curious, you've been in Texas long enough that I guess you maybe adapted to it a bit, but...
Yeah, now it's not a problem anymore. I'm used to it. I'm not going to say I enjoy it, but it doesn't bother me anymore.
Yeah. I was looking back at kind of your history, just doing some research, and was looking up your draft class. You were picked 11th in the 2012 MLS draft. Do you know who was picked one spot ahead of you?
Sure do. Yeah, Mr. Finley.
Ethan Finley picked number 10. Do you, 10, yeah. Were you like cursing him at the time? What was going through your head whenever you're sitting there waiting for your name to be called?
To be honest, I was nervous because I was told by a lot of people that I was going to be an earlier pick than that. And then I had I'll be honest, I struggled with the combine. I didn't play well because I don't know, the combine was different then, but it was kind of like, you know, that was a bigger thing then. And I struggled and then, you know, I dropped a couple picks. So I didn't know. And, you know, my agent said Dallas, if you got to Dallas at that pick, they probably would take you, but I still like wasn't sure. But yeah, that's kind of how it went that day. And I was just sitting there nervous.
Yeah. I always enjoy looking at those lists and just like, A, seeing which names I recognize, who did what, but also kind of like the revolving doors aspect of it, where it's like you were in at FC Dallas for 10 seasons. Is that right? And so just like, if you had been taken one pick before and Finley had been taking one pick back, just like the course of history would have been different from there.
Yeah, I also got to give a shout out to my club teammate Ray Gaddis, still around, still balling in Cincinnati. You know, it's not every day that two guys from the same club team, little club team in Indiana, you know, stick around.
Oh, nice.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, so right, had a long, obviously super distinguished career in Dallas. So talk about, and then, you know, Toronto whatever happened in Toronto happened, but like, how did the Austin move happen? And how do you feel about sort of getting back to Texas?
Yeah, just kind of, you know, came up during the window, you know, an opportunity to come to Austin, and it was something I wanted to jump at. You know, Austin has a great team, great fan base. It's a great club. And being back in Texas, also, you know, back home, you know, I thought it was a perfect fit. And I was like, let's go for it.
There are some, probably some complications and internal conflicts there, especially with the Copa Tejas going to be decided in Frisco in, I don't know, not that long from now. How are you dealing with all of that? Like, how is that playing in your mind at the moment?
This is my club now. I'm at Austin, so I have to, you know, do my best to, you know, win the Copa Tejas for this team. I mean, I had a great time in Dallas. You know, it'll always be a great memory. But, you know, for me, it's always, you know, for the team I'm on and my teammates, you know, I'm fighting for them. So it's going to be Austin for me. Like, I got to, you know, always focus on what we're doing.
As fans, we appreciated sort of the FC Dallas fan anger about you ending up in Austin after being a club legend. But that's probably like, that's just on our perspective of things and probably not so much yours. Like, so you came to town, got into a game pretty early on. Can you talk about the system that Josh Wolf prefers to play and sort of how used to that you are and maybe the differences a little bit that you think you'll need to adapt to as you play in Austin versus where you've been before?
Yeah, so the system itself, you know, I think Nico and Dallas, similar. I mean, it's not obviously not exactly the same, but, you know, it's, I think here it's more aggressive. They want to, you know, get into the attack quicker, get into those spaces behind the back line quicker. And also, you know, when we're pressing off of in their end, it's, you know, more aggressive, higher up, you know, win the ball back as close as we can to their goal. And that's a little bit different than it was in Dallas, but, a lot of similarities, to be honest. And I think it's helped me adapt a little bit to what Josh wants.
And I've been watching some film on you. I mean, I'm passingly familiar with you as a player, just watching your teams play, but I had never really just like focused and just watched you like I have recently. I think I have an idea of who you are as a player, but can you say in your own words, like how you see your own game and what aspects you think you bring to the team?
Yeah, sure. You know, for me, my first job is always a defender. That's always been my mentality, you know, keep the ball out of the goal at any means necessary. And everything else is kind of like an add on to that. And, you know, I like to be the guy that covers, you know, I want to be the guy that's covering my teammates at all time. If those guys need to go and be aggressive and press and do whatever, you know, I'm going to be the guy that's, you know, cleaning up any messes, anything that happens behind them. And, you know, that's something that I feel like I can bring to this team because of the aggressiveness of the guys that want to be pressing. You know, you need somebody that, you know, you're not always going to win the ball. It's not always going to go well when you press. So there's always got to be somebody, you know, there to help clean up.
And partnering with Julio Cascante, I know, like watching film from you in Toronto, it was often you were the guy with the ball on your foot, kind of running the buildup from you. How does it feel like knowing that with a guy like Julio next to you, that it doesn't have to be you all the time? Or like, what do you view that partnership looking like?
Yeah, it'll be more dynamic, I think, because, you know, when you have one guy doing it, it's a little bit easier to figure out for the other team. But when you have two guys that can do it, it's going to be tough for teams to, you know, contain us building out. You know, Julio, you know, I played against him a lot when he was in Portland, you know, and now with him, he's a great player. He's super aggressive. He wins the ball a lot. He's great with the ball at his feet. You know, that's something that when we played you guys, when I was with Toronto, it was something we talked about, you know, he's great at building out. So you know, I think it'll be good to be playing with him.
Well, you had a long time in Dallas with captain's experience. Obviously you've been a leader before, not probably like a super vocal shouty leader from what I could tell, but like what do you see as your leadership style and what do you think that brings to Austin?
Yeah. You know, I, for a long time it was, you know, the lead by example kind of player, you know, always going out and being the first to do whatever needed to be done, putting the work in, you know, just, I always thought that, how can you be a leader if you're not willing to do, you know, the things that you're telling other people to do? And so that was kind of how I viewed my leadership style. You know, obviously, you know, I'll be vocal if I need to be vocal, I'm going to get on to guys if they're not doing the right thing. You know, and just with my experience, you know, trying to lead the younger guys and all, you know, all those things together, you know, that's kind of how I like to lead. I mean, obviously there's other ways to do it, but I felt that like that was what made me a successful captain in Dallas.
Yeah, I found a quote from Ryan Hollingshead from several years ago, and he was talking about you as a leader and said that, like, Matt doesn't talk a lot, like he's not a super loud guy, but he's very thoughtful, and so when he does speak, you listen because you know it's going to be something important that he's saying to you.
Right. You know, that's, I always thought about that. You know, there's some guys who like to talk a lot and they like to yell a lot, and I feel like those guys get tuned out pretty quickly if they're just yelling all the time and you know, always on everything. And so it was my goal to try to, you know, pick out the most important moments so that people, when there was a moment that really needed something changed or something needed to happen or something, you know, your voice, they hear your voice and they know, all right, we got to listen because that's, this is something that's important. So that was kind of my style.
Let's maybe transition a little bit from like leadership to culture. You know, it's very public, like the culture in Toronto and maybe how broken it was. Like, what did you learn from that experience that you can maybe take to your next club?
Yeah, I mean, I was, you know, only there for 6 months, so there's not a whole lot that, you know, maybe I don't want to take a whole lot of that into this club, because I feel like the culture here is fantastic. It's, you know, the guys are always want to be around each other. We just had a barbecue today, you know, the asado. And when I was with Maxie in Dallas, same kind of thing, loved it. He makes a great barbecue. But, you know, I think the culture here versus there's a little bit different.
I was going to ask specifically about Maxie's asado, and because I knew you had played with him at Dallas. Is he like, where do you rank as far as like teammates cooking? Where does Maxie rank all time for you?
I mean, he's got to be like the top, to be honest. Like, it's the best. I mean, what else? I don't know what. Also, I don't know whether other teammates have actually cooked so much for us. So like, there's not a long list of guys that are doing that. But you know, I always loved those when in Dallas. We used to do them all the time. But you know, it's fantastic. Love doing those. And I think it's great for the culture of the team to get the guys, you know, out of the soccer, out of the gym, you know, whatever we're doing in the facility, and get them out and just having a little bit of fun.
This one is from a listener of ours named Spencer Cox, and he wanted to know, you're a veteran now. Like, how has your position, the position of center back, evolved since when you first started playing until now? Do you feel like the position has changed, and have you had to change your game throughout the years?
Oh, yeah, it's changed a ton. I think just, you know, how teams play now. And when I first joined the league, it was a lot of, you know, playing long, you know, the center backs, you know, not a lot of with the ball at their feet, not a lot of trying to break lines or do things like that. And then slowly through the years, it's, you know, the center backs have the ball more and more on their feet. They have to be better with the ball, you know, finding, you know, better passes, breaking lines, doing more. And also, you know, the pressing is different now. I think it's more, you know, aggressive. You know, you need to be more, you know, go win the ball higher up the field versus it used to be kind of like you just sit back and we'll win the ball and then we'll counter. So it's changed. I don't think I can stress enough. That's a great question. It's changed a ton, like massively, just in the center back position from when I joined to now.
Yeah, I
have.
Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Landon. I was going to say, just like, how do you sort of evolve and like stay on top of that?
You just got to work on your game. I mean, that's what those 5 days of practice every week are for. I mean, if you see that change starting to happen, which I could see it starting to happen in Dallas after those first couple of years, I mean, you got to start. And we changed the way we play too. So we're getting more of that work as well. But if you see the change coming, you got to start preparing for it.
We had Brad Stuver on a couple of times and had him talk about the same thing with the goalkeeper position, just talking about how much more they're asked to play with their feet and how he's had to kind of learn to do that over the years. So I imagine if similar position for a center back, but I don't know what I was doing. I think it was like sick a while back and at home in bed, just trying to find stuff on YouTube to watch, and watched the like 2005 FA Cup final or something, 'cause it was for free on YouTube, and just watching how the game was playing. Like, this is the Premier League, like the highest level, how direct and just launching long balls at a giant center forward. And it was like, this is unrecognizable to the game that we see on the field now.
Totally different. You know, it didn't take but less than 10 years for it to change.
Yeah. It's wild. Let's see. I guess like we've been familiar with you as a player, but I've really only known you as a big guy who tackles good. Like, that's the extent of my knowledge about you. Do you have any like hobbies or interests or hidden talents that you I would say that you would want the fans to know about, that you would be willing for the fans to know about?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a car guy. I love cars. Okay. So I have my dream car up in Dallas. It won't be coming down here because it's in its own garage and things. But yeah, I love working on it. I love working on anything. Like, I love doing projects at my house, installing things, just handyman kind of stuff. And cars, yeah, cars is a big one for me. I like it.
I imagine you'll have a lot of the...
Sorry, go ahead. I was going to say, I play video games with the guys now. A lot of the guys are on the Call of Duty now, so I'm in the squad.
who's really good? Who do you watch out for?
I think I'm the best. Awesome. I'm going to throw it out there right now. Like, the other guys, they might not agree, but I think I'm the best.
Who are all the gamers? And it's like Danny, Seba. Who else are the gamers?
Brad, Jesse, John. Some staff are in there. Like, it is a lot of, like, whenever you get home from training, you turn on, you're going to be in a squad. I feel like there's enough guys.
Well, any other things you want to say to Austin FC fans now that you're here in town?
I mean, I'm just excited to be here. I mean, it's a great club. I've seen it from afar for a few years, and you know, now being involved, you know, I'm just like, that's fantastic. I'm excited to be here, and hopefully, you know, I can help the team continue moving in a direction up the table that we should be going.
All right. Well, we are excited to finally get to see you on the field a little bit more. Good luck with the rest of the season, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. We want to thank Matt Hedges one more time for joining us and taking the time to come on the show. We'd like to remind you to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. And continue the conversation on Twitter at LVAHero87 and JBentley_ATX, and then at Moon Tower Soccer on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, where you can see the interview with Mike LaHood from last week. And then we'll also be, later this week, we'll be putting the Matt Hedges interview on there as well. Sign up for the Patreon. We really appreciate the support. We'll send you some cool stuff in return, and then visit the Striker website where you can get a 30% discount with the code MoonTower23 with a capital M. Jeremiah, what can folks look out for there?
If you didn't get enough talk about the Diego Fagundes trade on the show tonight, Phil West has 3 different articles about it that you can read. Read everything about every detail, from the press conference to the fan reaction to just the mechanics of the deal itself.
All right. Well, thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week to cover more Austin FC news. And again, hoping to have another interview. We'll see. Until then, I'm Landon Cottom.
Jeremiah Bentley.
We'll catch you next time.
Thing for nothing, you never.
La gente.
Oh my God.